Many of you have heard a version of the jokes about something that's good, but no, it's bad, but it's good. For example, the man who is speaking with his friend said, "Well, I just recently got married." His friend said, "That's good." The man said, "No, that's bad." Because sometimes she can be really mean and act in ways that are very ugly. So his friend said, "Well, that's bad." The man said, "Well, that's good, because she's very rich." The man said, "That's good." He said, "No, that's bad, because she hasn't given me a cent to buy anything or do anything that I would like to do." So his friend said, "That's bad." The man said, "No, but it's good. She just bought a beautiful mansion that we're living in. I'm enjoying it tremendously." So his friend said, "That's good." The man said, "That's bad, because the house had just burned down." His friend said, "Well, that's bad." The man said, "No, it's good. She was in it when it burned down." Now, I admit that may be in bad taste. But I want to recognize that humor is good. But also humor could be bad. Humor can bring us together, but it also might drive people away. Humor can relieve tension and ease the burdens that we may face. But also it can be used to attack and belittle and undermine people. Maybe the best humor is that which is self-deprecating, making fun of yourself. Perhaps the worst is singling out others. But humor can lift up and also put down. A world leader said at one time that humor is a very serious thing. And it can be, because of the ways in which it can be used or misused. I know that there are often times that I find something funny, but that doesn't make it so, like you have shared with me on many occasions. But we can appreciate and enjoy good humor. And we think about what it means to be good. When we reflect on the words of Jesus as he talks about the Good Shepherd. So often when we think of someone who is good, we might think of a practical sense. Maybe how they live or the moral standard that they try to strive to fulfill. They're good because it's seen in the result of how they live their lives, their behavior, or their activities. We'll say that person, well, that person's good. And the role of the shepherd, we can see that the hired hand may be able to do a good job, may be capable and responsible and fulfilling the work, but really, it's a job in order to make money. It's not a calling. It's not a conviction in their lives. There is no strong impulse for them to do this type of work. But perhaps it's out of necessity. They are told what to do, and they do it. But is that the good Jesus speaks of? Doing what one is told. Years ago, in my courtship days with Allison, I was sharing with a friend that the biggest thing in my life right now is my girlfriend. I said, "I love this girl. I know I love her because she told me." But when Jesus speaks of the Good Shepherd, it goes beyond maybe our understandings of what good is. For Jesus talks of the Good Shepherd who lays down his life. For a shepherd in Jesus' day was one who was born to the task. One who was sent out with the flock as soon as being old enough. One who had a natural disposition to the role, an attraction to it. The lives of the good shepherd, the sheep were their companions. They were their friends. The good shepherds knew the characteristics of each and every one, even their personalities. In the role that they lived out, the job, the service that they performed, it was a compelling power of goodness, a loveliness in what they did, a beautiful reflection of who they were. Someone described it as, when this type of person was observed, it brought delight to the heart. Delight to the heart to see it, to see an expression of that type of life. Perhaps in our day we might see it in the life of a doctor who cares for us during difficult times. A doctor who may not stand out because of some great skill or efficiency or successes, but rather through a kindness and a graciousness. One who is a friend and a comforter during difficult times, who expresses compassion and devotion to your well-being. These are what we think of when Jesus talks of himself of being a good shepherd. As he says, I know my own. And even beyond that, Jesus says, yet there are other sheep. That Jesus is to enlarge the flock by the inclusive of others, those who are now outside. This is a message to the people of Jesus' day. Jesus saying that the call that went out to Israel, the call that God made to his chosen people, was for the sake of the entire world, not just them. Because they were to be a light to the nations. It was their role for the world to know the God of Israel. But during those years, the people of Israel began to see themselves in a position of privilege, not open to others. They practiced an exclusiveness and including only those that met certain standards or regulations or rules. There were those who continued to say that God was not exclusively the God of Israel. But over time, that voice became smaller and smaller. It was a land that did not include the others. A man was sharing a little bit about his new mail order bride that came from a foreign, distant country. He was sharing about how wonderful the experience had been. But he said there was one problem. The problem was that now that he's on the mailing list, every month they send a relative of his bride whether they want it or not. When Jesus speaks of those outsiders, he speaks of ways in which they are included. That Jesus is a unifier of all people, and he gathers the entire world. He gathers the other sheep. And these others are drawn by his goodness, by the comforting voice of the shepherd, by this good shepherd who had laid down his own life, who embraced that role, chose to do so, who knew the cost. For the good shepherd did not lose his life, but rather gave his life. Gave his life for us. A goodness that is worthy of praise. And so when we describe the shepherd as good, in the same way, we are to describe the deeds and the works of the Christian. For it describes things that are done that make life lovely. The works of the Christian, someone described as the bloom of charm. Lives that go beyond some standard of morality, whatever that might be, beyond rules and regulations that are imposed, but rather lives that when observed are attractive and draw people together. The Christian life is a life of loveliness. It radiates a shining confidence. It radiates a shining contentment. There's a vitality. There's a true life being lived. A life that is attractive. A life that is lovely. Being expressions of God's grace. Being expressions of God's love. Amen.